This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Is this all that's grown back yet, or is it short for another role?
It's all that's grown back. Wow. Reshoots a few weeks ago.
Can you talk about the reshoots and what was entailed?
Yeah, we did this kick-ass little action sequence in there. Couple little touch-ups and stuff, and little bits, little inserts, you know. It's lovely to have that luxury. And then we had an action sequence that we sort of added to.
Since we haven't seen the movie yet, can you tell us a little bit about your character and about the movie?
Agent 47. He's he's based on this video game character. He's essentially a guy that was sort of born and bred to for the purpose of killing. And the story essentially is about a guy. He was hired to do a job, and he does it seemingly as well as he's done any other. And he's told by the people he works for that it was a witness, and he's going to go clean that up, and something's not right when he sees her. It's a woman, played by Olga Kurylenko, who was just fantastic. She did a really lovely job, and there appears to be no recognition when she sees me, which obviously means something's not right. And the next thing you know, someone's trying to kill me. The guy I thought I killed is on television, and nothing makes sense anymore. It's sort of a guy's world sort of just being turned upside down.
Did you play the video game just to get used to it, or did you read anything up on it?
I did read about it. The lovely thing about the internet, as you people know, there's a wealth of information there. However factual, I'm not sure, but there was a wealth of information. And it felt like we were, I thought we did based on what I read and what I understand, it was, we did a good job of sort of honoring and paying tribute to the game, but at the same time we weren't really slave to it, which was a nice place to work from. Xavier was a big fan of the game, the director, big gamer in general, and loved the game. And he was really adamant about certain things that were reflected in the game. I also just thought, I just know in particular, other than the imagery that I saw, there was things like, thank you, Carol, appreciate it. There was a lot of things that I felt like once we got our hands on the script that Xavier and I both sort of saw eye to eye on that. It's hard to tell. It's hard to tell what came first, whether it was because we read about something in the game that inspired choices we made, or whether there were choices that we wanted to do that sort of were also reflected in the game. But we were conscious of it the whole time.
Well, have you given your likeness to future versions of the game?
Oh, that's a lawyer question. I don't, honestly, I'm not sure how they work out there. Have I given my likeness to? I don't know. I don't think so.
How did it feel to feel the air on your freshly shaved head?
It's a little chilly. Yeah. But, came with the part.
Did Xavier direct the reshoots? Because there had been some talk that he's not.
He is involved. He's very involved. I saw him when I was there. He did not direct the reshoots, but I don't know what's Fox's position on that, by the way. Maybe he did direct the reshoots. I heard that talk that he was fired. I kept saying I was trying to get that fire guy fired for months. I don't know. They finally fired him? What the fuck? I was saying forever. He doesn't speak English. Doesn't anybody see that as a problem?
We've heard about the film that it was, this is what I've heard, and maybe you can clarify it, that the film was really, really violent, mm-hmm. and that Fox got a little bit scared and is like pulling back the level of violence that was originally shot.
Yeah, I'm aware of that too, that was being talked about. I have no information to where that's to where that supports that at all. I've had conversations, which, you know, they don't have to have with me at all, but I've been very involved, might be a bit of a strong word, but they've kept me in the loop, you know, here at the studio. And there was never anything, there was never a conversation that I've had with any of the executives here or the producers in France or with Xavier that was about fear of being too violent. The only conversations we've had have been creative conversations about the kind of violence and where it hurts or helps the story. There's no way it's not a violent film. We'd have a like 45-minute film if they, you know, they can't take out. I mean, we shot a very violent film. I think what happens is sometimes you know, it's a question of how you're going to, if there's any truth to that rumor at all, there's always a conversation about what you're trying to elicit in the audience in terms of the feelings that they have. You know, there's a difference between violence in James Bond films, especially the ones in the past, as opposed to a violence in a Quentin Tarantino film, as opposed to violence in a, you know, a horror film and stuff. They all, you know, it's different. Or something that's really designed to make you uncomfortable. And I think, as far as I know, the conversation was simply about that, finding the right tone, and not about this idea of toning it down or making it anything less than an R-rated film. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah.
What is the tone? I mean, is it sort of like gritty violence? Is it like sort of fantastical, exciting violence? What is the sort of the tone?
I thought what we were making was reminiscent of, in terms of specific films, it felt like there was something about the old John Woo films, about some of the films that have come out of South Korea. There was a certain elegance to the film, but the violence was there as well. It wasn't the kind of it wasn't comical or sort of, we weren't making something where it felt like, well, 50 guys just died, I barely noticed. It wasn't that kind of thing. And I think that as the movie changed, I know Xavier and I had a lot of conversations about the type of violence and how it changes throughout the film as the character changes. You know, Xavier was a very, very thoughtful guy, a very smart guy, and he really is. He is the main reason, I think, that I was enthusiastic about this project. It's not lost on me that the fact that Fox offered me a project like this was quite an opportunity, and it was quite flattering. It's nothing, I hadn't done anything like this before. I had this kind of a responsibility, and that was all well and good. But Xavier was, from the moment we met, he was, his enthusiasm for the material he was aiming high. You know, he wanted to make something that I felt was he was aiming high, you know, and I thought that was impressive.
We spoke to you earlier this year, and the deal for this hadn't even been final, so how quickly did this all come together for you?
It was quick, yeah. You're talking about like when you guys asked if I was doing it, and I said it was not true, because it was out on the internet first? Is that what you mean?
Around January when we did Catch and Release, you haven't committed to
it. And it was out, a rumor was out on the internet or something like that.
I mean, so within a year to have shot and finished the film.
Yeah, no, it's... Apparently that's the way they do things around here. I mean, it's crazy. You know, Die Hard was not as... I wasn't as much a part of it, obviously, but it felt similar in its scale, how fast it was shot. Because I was shooting Die Hard in January, and that's coming out on DVD in a couple of weeks. So that's impressive. I think at that time there was conversations happening, but it certainly wasn't set in stone. I hadn't met Xavier at that time. I didn't commit to the film until Xavier and I talked. But it all happened fast, yeah.
Is there any humor in the film, or is it pretty serious?
We tried to find some moments. We did. We definitely did. Perhaps not enough. You know, I haven't seen the final thing. But, you know, it's always nice when you can find those little moments, you find those little layers.
Is it sort of like a gallows humor, a dark humor, or...?
Yeah, and we're not yucking it up by any means. I mean, I think he was trying to make a serious film, you know. But still, you got to find those moments.
I believe that Luc Besson produced this, or was
yeah.
executive producer.
Yeah.
How involved was he in the production, or was it just sort of unnamed?
You know, I don't know. I can tell you I had very little interaction with him when we were making the film. I met him. He was there for a day or two. I don't know how involved he was other than that. You know, other than my experience, I didn't have that much interaction with him.
And could you talk a little bit about filming the action set pieces and, you know, being so involved, you know, the leader in the film?
You know, it was great. I really enjoyed it. It was very challenging. It was challenging for a number of reasons. One, it was challenging because it's a big responsibility, and and I hadn't had it before, to be the lead in this kind of a film. And then it was all sort of amplified by the fact that the director was French and the crew was Bulgarian, and so on and so forth. Adds all sorts of additional challenges. But that being said, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. And you know, like I said, Xavier was a very smart guy, and it was very rewarding, sort of engaging with him creatively, and sort of, you know, fighting the fight, if you will, day in and day out. How can we make this? Is there a way to make this scene smarter? Is there a way to make this scene more sort of? Can we make, you know, how much of a character film can we make, you know, given the source material? Can we still sort of try to get to the heart of something here?
Well, what sort of acting tools did you have playing this guy who is almost nothing but killing?
Well, yeah, but you know, the angle I kind of take is you let that take care, you trust that that sort of takes care of itself. You know, you trust that you kill like a bunch of guys in an elevator, and you walk out the only guy without a scratch on you. That defines who you are, and so you trust that, and you can kind of leave that alone, and you say, well, I don't really need to try to convince everybody I'm a badass, because I just walked in that situation and I'm the one who comes out without a scratch. And so you kind of put that aside. And then what I find you try to do is say, well, then what else is there? How many angles can you look at this? Where's the humanity in it all? And you know, you start with a guy who goes from job to job to job, and you know, cliche or something, but you just assume it's sort of a lonely existence and traveling salesman kind of thing. And I thought for a second it was kind of interesting to look at his job prior to sort of the events that start to happen. It's kind of mundane, you know, job to job. You're really good at what you do. It's probably pretty easy. You're not really engaging with a lot of people. And there's probably a sort of detachment to it all in order to sort of do it. And then that starts to get kind of interesting, you know. That starts to get sort of... when you look at something that seems so special and you try to find what's pedestrian about it, you know. And the second thing that starts to happen is you realize once this guy's... But then you take that and you just turn that upside down. Like, what happens when that guy's world just turns completely upside down And you have this sort of sense of a soldier, for lack of a better term, who essentially his job is, you know, you point and I'll shoot. That's basically what the assassin's not choosing who dies and who doesn't die. He says, someone gives him a target and then he goes and takes it out. But what happens when there's no boss. The boss is not to be trusted. The target's not being given to you. And who do you take out and who do you not take out? And what that starts to happen is it also starts to kind of force him to examine in some sort of small, maybe almost unconscious way, what else is there? You know, if I'm not that guy, then what? Do I have any other job skills? You know what I mean? And you start looking at it that way. And those are very human experiences. Everybody can relate to that. Everybody can relate to the idea of, you know, the carpet being pulled out from under you. And everybody can relate to the idea of asking yourself, is this who I am? Or am I capable of being something else? Not necessarily something better, but something else. Or is that just predetermined? Those are interesting things to try to explore.
Is this a character that the studio envisions for a franchise? Is this something that you'd want to pursue as a franchise?
I don't know what the studios... but you'd have to ask them. These days it seems like everything is, you know, intended to be... If it's successful, there's another one coming. It's hard to find a movie these days that doesn't have a franchise potential. Someone was telling me the other day, Game Plan, sequel. Like, really? It's a franchise? I didn't see that. But it did great, so why the fuck not? I don't know.
Are you signed for a multiple?
Yes. Yeah.
Does this film end at all on like a cliffhanger note or any sort of setup, a natural setup for a sequel?
It's certainly rich with possibility, yeah. Yeah. So, but, you know, we're getting ahead of ourselves. What's that?
I'm just kidding. I said you're not dead in the end or anything.
There's plenty of other guys with bald heads and tattoos on the back. I'm sure they can make it. Agent 48.
You recently finished this. Are you signed on for starting another project soon? What's in your horizon?
I leave on Wednesday or something. I'm going to do a film in Canada starting in Monday. I start Monday. And that will take me towards the end of the year, I guess. And then I'm not sure after that.
Can you tell us what the film is?
I'm doing a movie called The High Life. I'm not sure if there's a "the," but it's definitely High Life. The High Life. It is a guy named Gary Yates is directing it. He directed a movie a few years ago that was at Sundance called Seven Times Lucky, which is a great little film. And it's a movie about... four morphine addicts in 1983 who attempt to rob the bank. And it's funny.
And who are you doing the film with? Who are your other compadres?
If I butcher anyone's name, Rosif Sutherland is in it. I think I'm saying his name correctly. And I think his name is Joe Anderson. He's in...
Across the Universe.
He's in Across the Universe. Yeah. It is Joe Anderson, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Joe Anderson is doing it as well. And there's one more guy, and he hasn't been... I'd be speaking out of turn, locking up somebody's deal.
Well, that's what makes it interesting.
We do that.
Yes. That's what you guys do, yeah. That's right. That's right. There's one other guy, he's replacing Vin Diesel. It was going to be Vin Diesel, but he's been fired.
It's sort of interesting about your career, because you're going from this big action mainstream picture to what's going to be a much smaller,
edgier
movie.
Yeah.
What is sort of, do you see yourself dancing back and forth like that? Or?
You know, as long as they'll let me. You know, I really... like right now, my mindset, while really excited about Hitman, I can't wait to do this tiny little film. Because... you know, and God bless the studio executives that gave me this job, but it's a really different creative conversation. You know, And it's nice to be able to go and just shoot. And you know, you got 98 pages, whatever the script is, and you're like, it's perfect. Let's just shoot that. It's great. It's a nice feeling, and the director's got all the power in the world, and those are great things. On the other hand, when that's done, I'll say, somebody give me a big fucking trailer, because this is ridiculous. This is a fucking joke. They don't got cable or anything in there. And, you know, I can't eat my pool. Now, it's one of those, you know, it's a lovely to be able to go back and forth. And if I can keep doing it, you know, I had the pleasure of working with Bruce Willis, and he has how he's been able to go back and forth from big picture, small picture, without any lack of credibility or disrupting the film, or there's no sort of hurdle to get over. You know, when he puts himself in a small picture, you don't have to sort of say, what the fuck is Bruce Willis doing in there? You know, he's a goddamn genius. It's really impressive, and I would love to be able to steal a page from that.
But he still has a big trailer, even on the small film, right?
You know, it's a good question. I don't think so.
Now that it appears that the Deadwood TV movies are probably not going to happen.
Probably not, yeah.
What are your
Were
thoughts
they
about
going to happen?
Now that appears to be totally in the past,
yeah.
What are your thoughts on the kind of the legacy of that show? And did you, you know, keep anything from the show as kind of a memento?
The answer to your last question is no, I didn't keep anything from the show. My feelings on that show are the same as they were from the jump. It was an incredible creative experience, really one of the greatest experiences I imagine I'll ever have. Working for David Milch was a job of a lifetime.
You feel chipped, though, that you're not going to get a chance to kind of like do that kind of
honestly. No. I mean, because it always comes out. It always feels a little. I really could give a shit. I mean it in the most respectful way. I had a great time making that show, and I'm very thankful for been given that experience. And you know, to think in any other, to look at it from any other angle, I think is. It's a slippery slope, you know. I don't think anybody owes me anything. I think that, you know, I walk away from that saying, you know, thank God it existed. And I have great relationships from that show. And it's better than like 7-8 years on TV, like 3 years on TV, you know.